Yes, you're very welcome back for the Drive for Five special on OTB Sports Radio. Stephen Doyle here, taking you through the Dublin love-in. This is the part that everybody's been waiting for all morning. Well, all I can say is just in over 72 hours now, a team will take to the Croke Park turf with the weight of history bearing down on their shoulders. They themselves standing on the shoulders of giants and carrying the hopes of their fellow county men and women onto the field of dreams on Jones's Road. These 26 men have the chance to do something no other inter-county team has done. Yes, fellow Gaels, the pressure is well and truly on the senior footballers of County Kerry, who can win an unprecedented 38th All-Ireland senior football title. Now, I don't know about you, Philip Egan, but I think that's a lot of pressure for a young man like David Clifford, or even a great midfielder like David Moore to be carrying in on Sunday.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, all the pressure's on Kerry, surely.
Without a doubt, without a doubt.
I mean, for Dublin, this is just another game, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like we've been here before, you know, it's we know what to do.
That's it.
There's nothing new here to Dublin, so yeah, I wouldn't fancy being a Kerry player on Sunday.
No.
But that might take us on nicely to our top five moments of the Drive for Five. 2009 was the first one we picked out, Phil.
Yes, these are kind of key moments that got us to where we are now. And I think 2009 quarterfinal has to get a mention. And incidentally, it was a Dublin-Kerry game. And just Dublin were fancied in this one because Kerry had kind of stuttered their way through. They just about beat Sligo, Longford, Antrim. They weren't convincing. Dublin had beaten Kildare in the Leinster final to win five Leinster titles in a row. And even the Dublin players talk about that game and they felt, you know, let's get into them straight away. 40 seconds gone, Gooch has the ball in the net. And it's like the whole game plan went out the window. The Dublin team were deflated. I can remember Dublin players going for goals early, even though you can see it in the first minute. There's loads of time to recover.
Yeah.
But they just seemed to panic. And ultimately, Kerry win by 17 points. Startled
airwakes. I was up on the hill that day and I was absolutely distraught.
Yeah, because it was a Monday. It was a bank holiday Monday. So I think I was in the Hogan stand that day.
Yeah.
And
we also hit the woodwork a couple of times as well, didn't we? Connolly and Alan Brogan.
Yeah, I can remember Kieran Whelan going close as well. And again, it was just lads going for goals when they didn't need to so early.
Yeah, it was funny. I was actually reading back some of the match reports from the day and it's all this talk of Kerry playing champagne football and defenders scoring points and all. It's actually like reading a match report from a Dublin game now.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it definitely changed things. A lot of people left at halftime, which tends to happen. So there was
you never leave, Phil. You 14, stay there till the end.
14 points in it. Do you know what? I stayed there for the second half and I looked at Dublin players and I thought, right, you've no chance of winning this game, but I want to see something from the players that they're not going to throw the towel. And Paul Griffin's one that sprung to mind that day where he was, I think he was captain that season.
He was,
and he kept going. And I was like, you know, as tough as it is, you have to keep going.
Yeah, great captain Paul Griffin.
Yeah, some players didn't keep going, unfortunately.
Yeah.
A lot of fans left and they could, because it was Pat Gilroy's first year in charge and everyone thought, you know, he's going to be the man to get this, to change things, and Dublin are going to win that All-Ireland. And then at the end of 2009, we were all thinking, It's the same old story, but little did we know, things were going to change.
Yeah.
It started with the 2010 league campaign.
Well, that takes us on to moment two of our top five moments of the Drive for Five, and that's 2011, the 2011 final. And we picked, like I know we could have picked the great free kick by Stephen Cluxon, which was an amazing thing, obviously, and that was the one. But I just thought Kevin McManaman's goal, what a moment. Absolutely unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Darren O'Sullivan and Barry Cahill were on off the ball earlier this week, and Darren actually said, like, he'll never forget the noise when that goal went in.
Yeah.
And I know people, I was actually back at base working, and I know people who said that the ground shook where they were when that goal went in, because it was that, it looked like Kerry were going to just see this one out, and all of a sudden, Kevin McManaman's given the ball by Alan Brogan.
Yeah.
Dances his way around.
And actually, funny enough, you can see Bernard Brogan behind Kevin, like further out the field, and he's kind of screaming for the ball. Once Kevin gets his hands on it, Bernard's screaming for the pass, but he ignored him and just went himself and hit it low and hard. I actually remember doing an interview with Brendan McManaman and his brother, and he ended up on the hill behind the goal as well. You imagine that, senior brother kicking a goal into Hill 16 on an All-Ireland final day.
And then, like, even there was a point in it, and it kind of almost gets forgotten in it, that Kevin Nolan decides to kick his first ever point in championship from about 35 yards out, and Dermot Connolly passes the ball to him,
yeah,
and he goes on a loop. I think he's expecting to get it back, but Kevin Nolan just knocks it over. He got man of the match that
day. Man of the match, yeah, brilliant.
He was brilliant, and then obviously it comes down to Cluxton's
2014, Phil. Another heartbreak for Dublin, and I was reading a great there's a great Conor McKeown piece worth looking back on from this week actually in the Herald, and it's called A Public Admission and a Noticeable Tweak: How Jim Gavin's One Championship Defeat Shaped the Drive for Five. It was a disaster against Donegal.
It was all going well,
leaving gaps at the back, yeah, for Donegal to get through.
Yeah, conceded three goals, and ever since then they've tightened things up. Even this season, they've only conceded one goal from play in the championship, and that was the Lee Keegan goal in the semi-finals. So
yeah,
that was a moment where, you know, they say you learn from your mistakes, and Dublin certainly have. And
Keane O'Sullivan deployed from there, and their defensive record just was immeasurably improved. 2015 then, Phil, was our fourth moment, and Alan Brogan signing off for Dublin, kicking a point in the Hill 16 to make it 11 points to 8 in the 67th minute against...
Yeah, just got the ball from James McCarthy after Killian Young had almost got in for a goal. Goes down the pitch, passes to Bernard, gets the ball back. Again, Connolly provides the dummy run.
Yeah.
Brogan decides, keeps going. His last point in intercounty football makes it 12-8.
Yeah.
And then you pretty much know that it's done. It's done and dusted 3 minutes ago. And he was only on the pitch a minute, by the way.
And then 2017 from open number 5, Dean Rock's free. Mayo trying all sorts of skullduggery to put him off his free kick. He actually kicked it with 6 minutes added on, and he kicked it in the 76 minute and 2 seconds. The scores tied between Dublin and Mayo, 1-16 each.
Yeah, I looked at it as well. He had about a minute and 10 standing with the ball and standing over it. And bear in mind as well, he'd just seen Killian O'Connor hit the post previously, about 4 minutes before that, to put Mayo ahead. So, you know, he had all the, I'd love to know what was going on in his head, but ice in the veins, knocks it over with a GPS being thrown at him, no bother to him, and the rest is history.
It certainly is. Well, one man who knows about history is the next guest we have on our Dublin Love-In, and there's plenty more guests to come. We're going to have Dublin goalkeeper John O'Leary, women's goalkeeper Cillian O'Connor. We're also going to have Paul Beelan coming in. But before that, I'm delighted to welcome a true blue dub to open proceedings, a man born in the heart of the city, Stony Batter, an O'Connell Boys Club man who played in 6 consecutive All-Ireland finals. He won 3 of those. Former Dublin goalkeeper Paddy Cullen, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Or good afternoon, I should say.
Are you well, Paddy? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have my details down to the minutes and the seconds like you have in there. Like some of those lads are just. Have they written it down? Tell the truth.
Yeah, well, we definitely have. Yeah. My memory's not that great now, Paddy. Listen.
Good to hear you, lads.
We can't really go on today, I suppose, Paddy, just without paying tribute to one of the greats. Whom we lost this year, the Blue Panther, Anton O'Toole, sadly passed away last May, and he was there in the 3 All-Ireland winning teams of the 70s and again in 83.
Sure.
You might tell us what made him such a great player, Paddy.
Well, it's extraordinary with when, you know, at that time when Heffernan was pulling players in from different areas, like Kevin Morden arrived years later on a little Honda motorbike, a donkey jacket. So, I mean, there was all sorts. But when Anton arrived in, he was, I wouldn't have known of him because I wasn't senior players. But he was, he's just an extraordinary guy insofar as he was so quiet, gangly, lanky. He couldn't kick the ball very far. And Heffernan used to give him a lot of footballs to take home with him, and they were kicked him around wherever he wanted, but to get some strength and get length into his kick. So, and, then whatever Heffernan saw in him, he had this jink that he could, you know, leave players for dead, which was a great element because since 77 he kept us in that game with a couple of points before half time that just we were champing at the bit at that stage. And as a person, as a footballer, he was just extraordinary. As a person, he was more extraordinary insofar as you could never say anything about anybody. He was a good friend of mine, even though there was a serious age gap in that team. You know, I would have been 6-7 years older than him.
Yeah.
No more than Mullins was 20 when I was hitting 30, you know. So it was a very strange mix of 5 or 6 of us at the wrong end of the the scale, but we lasted a few years, 6 years. So, but Anton was probably one of our most key. I mean, the forwards were our key players. You know, we'd go backs, and it was a different game, right, Stephen? It was a completely different game, you know, yeah, to what we're playing now. But that didn't make any difference. It was still exciting, and Anton made us. It's so sad, you know, talking about him, because we've a little committee that organises our golf away. And we've been doing it for any excuse. Well, you see, we played six in a row, so we have six years of excuses for going away to celebrate our All-Ireland win and All-Ireland losses. So we had a little committee, and Anton was part of our little committee of five, and then we're reduced to four, and we just got to know him even better again afterwards. I mean, we went with the Cup down to Wexford, and he said, you'd have to come over to Mayo. My folks were from there, because my dad was from Wexford. And, you know, we travelled a bit of the country together. And when you go one-on-one, it's I have all the nice memories of Anton, and it's so sad that he's left us. It's still hard to get over, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll be in the thoughts of many Dublin fans on Sunday, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a mention maybe in the Dublin dressing room before the game as well,
yeah,
Paddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All-Ireland final day, the dressing room, these Dubs, they know what it's all about. What was it like for yourself after experiencing a few? Does it get easier?
Well, the beauty of what happened to me was I was there from around, you know, late 66, 60, well, 67 really I started. It was 74 again, anything happened. We used to get beaten by everybody around the country. And then all of a sudden it happens. So, and when it happens when you get into the first one and you win it, you've reached the Holy Grail as such. So afterwards, then on the next year, we were beaten by these young whippersnappers, which I raise my finger and say, you know, it's a two horse race, right?
Yeah.
On Sunday, it's a two horse race, and Kerry will. You know, they'd nearly have to get the boat instead of the train home to Tralee, I'd say, if they don't do some damage to us and stop us. But I just feel that it's Dublin know what to do. They're not going to change the pattern they play. It's very successful, and it's going to win the game for them. But, I mean, if Kerry can do what Mayo did for so long, and that's stay with Dublin, and you know, you were talking about 2015 there, 2015 was, I remember it well, the ball was thrown in and the rain came down and it didn't stop till he blew the final whistle and then the rain stopped again.
Yeah.
Now, there was 3 points in it and there was a few skittery old balls went in around the box of the goalkeeper, of our goal, right? Which, on a very bad, rainy, wet day, a ball can skid in. And we dominated the whole match, that 2015 game. We were still only 3 points ahead. We've only won two All-Irelands with 1 point in the difference, and we've only won another one with 2 points in the difference, and one with 3 points in the difference. So, you know, if a team can stay with Dublin, fitness-wise, stamina-wise, strength-wise, and hold them within a few scores or within a score or two, then I think it's going to be a game and a half, and I think Kerry are going to be ready for that.
Paddy, I'm not sure how well you know Jim Gavin, but... You know, a bit like
I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, Kevin, that's true. But I'm just wondering, you know, because Kevin Heffernan revolutionised Gaelic football in the country, not just in Dublin, and Jim Gavin is doing something like that as well. Do you see any similarities between the two men?
They're very, very similar. They're very similar. I don't know anything about, you know, sitting down and having meetings, like team meetings, but the team meetings with Heffernan were very productive. You know, we were in a little tin hut out in Parnell Park, and
the Nissan hut.
it was a tin hut anyway. It's corrugated iron yoke, but you know, everybody was, but the finger was pointed at you, and you, okay, what about you, and what about you? So everybody had to speak, whether you liked it or not, what you were going to do and what your job was. And it was like being, I'm not saying brainwashed, but it was just to remind you. And that's the way he did it, and he was a very quiet man, as is Jim Gavin, a man of few words, even though he was very high up in his business and in his workplace. But they were very similar, and I would think Jim Gavin, who says very little and keeps everything to himself, he's dead right.
Yeah.
I'd be the opposite. consequently, I didn't win anything.
Jim Gavin doesn't smoke.
And I mismanaged for 2 years, so...
Jim Gavin wouldn't be smoking sweet after neither, Paddy.
Well, he's I've met him several times, and he's a good fella, you know. He's surprised me, you know. And I've met Stephen Cluxton, too, who I must say is one of our key now men for Sunday. I mean, the kick-out is so important, and that man can find you from... Like, it's like radar stuff, 50, yeah. 60 yards. On the run, he can put it into your lap.
Paddy, when we said we were getting Paddy Cullen on for the Dublin Hour, the Kerry lad said, do you know what we'll do? We'll get Mikey Sheehy on for the Kerry Hour.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's always a bit of dirt knocking around, isn't there? You know, that's what they do with me all the time. They kind of build me up and then they just pull the carpet out from under me just so I'm finished.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's
He's
a name.
He's a good man, that fella. Yeah. Just don't turn your back on him. That's the only thing.
Oh, listen, Paddy, you know what? You did enough. Well, it's funny enough, actually, because I was reading back the Kevin Heffernan book there during the week. Yeah. And it was just an interesting little passage where it said that you were like the dreamer of the team because they were talking about that you'd been with the All-Star Cork team the year before,
that's
1976.
Right, yeah. I was a replacement for Billy Morgan, yeah.
Yeah. And you were just really blown away by the fact that these fellas were off to America, and you just really believed that Dublin could get there as well.
Yeah, and the following, and it was that year. It was actually the spring of '74 when we got that tour. And in those days, as you know, it was the Carroll's All Stars, and what they did was they picked their All Stars, so and then they put in replacements for the All Stars, which I thought was a great idea because it was given players an opportunity to get into the All Stars by the back door, if you like. And it gave you, I mean, such an experience travelling, to America and coming back and be able to tell the lads. I was turning it up in training like almost every night of playing because we were on the flight path from the airport. And so any of the big machines that would go overhead, I'd say, now they're heading for New York, boys, you know. So, and this is where we're going next April. So, I mean, it did come true. I believed it was possible, you know. I mean, we shook timbers and bones that year and surprised everybody, including ourselves, I would think.
Well, Paddy, if you don't have dreams, you have nothing. And
well, I'm a dreamer, and yeah. I always told, even when I managed, I said, you have to have a dream. And, you know, if the only way to fill a dream is to go out and do it.
Absolutely. Do you think we'll do it on Sunday?
Yes.
You do. That's all we need, Paddy. Listen, okay. Paddy, thanks a million for joining us and enjoy the game on Sunday.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Great stuff there. Paddy Cullen, former Dublin goalkeeper. Now, the Drive for Five special is taking over, off the ball sports radio all day from 7 a.m. to midnight with build-up to the All-Ireland final this Sunday between Dublin and Kerry. It's all with thanks to Tech7. Simply tech it and leave it. Now, from one Dublin legend to another, here's Paul Flynn.
Like that's 2014, arguably, and I say this a lot, like was my favourite season playing Gaelic football. And I tell you why, because we nearly, I felt, changed the game, right? We were probably in the sense that we were playing full press, right? Like there was no sweepers, there was all out attack. And our motto was just hunt them down, get the ball back, and get it over the bar. And we'd hunt them, we'd press up on kickouts, we'd press up everywhere in the pitch. And in fairness to Donegal, they used it to our disadvantage. And in that first 25 minutes, we had them pinned in. Like, you know, our motto was like, if they've two sweepers, just press up on them. They need no sweepers, and we just go at them and back ourselves man to man. That's exciting. If you're playing football like that and that's your attitude, like it just kind of seeps into your training and it seeps into your mindset. It really was aggressive and, you know, it just exciting. I see a lot of it in the Premiership now where teams are pressing up and like if the Premiership has turned into, or any like soccer matches now at the moment, like it's so exciting to watch when you see that. So anyway, then first 25 minutes, we were kicking points from everywhere. We realised they were going to have men kind of blocking up the D, and we had practiced a lot of long range shooting, and they all went over. A couple of key moments where we goal chances that didn't, you know, weren't executed, and then they went down and caught us in the sucker punch, and with a goal, which was a bit of luck in the first goal, but then they just kind of built on it, like they were very good at doing. And then the second half, they just like, you know, blew us out, you know. So, but again, it was still a very enjoyable year, and you know, it was a big loss. It changed our whole, you know, attitude to the game. We then kind of became a little bit more kind of cautious or conservative at the back, smarter, probably, really. Like,
now, that's Dublin legend Paul Flynn, who was speaking to the lads last week. Now, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by three Dublin All-Ireland winners. From the end here, winner in 1983 and captain of the winning team in 1995, goalkeeper John O'Leary. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you.
We also have the winner of the goalkeeper of the women's winning team in 2010, Cliona O'Connor. Thanks for joining us, Cliona.
No problem.
And of course, John's teammate and midfielder from the 1995 winning team, Paul Beelan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen.
Paul, actually, you were just saying to me there, it's like Christmas week.
Yeah, I mean, this week is you know, it's an anti-climax coming up to it. It's always very, very exciting, you know, coming into the All-Ireland final, particularly when Dublin are in it, and particularly when we're going for this famous five in a row.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really exciting at the moment, yeah, you can feel the tempo.
Yourself, Cliona, would you be like a fan now as well, just sort of getting the butterflies and stuff this week?
Ah, you're always a fan, you know, whatever code is playing and whatever, we're all Dubs at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And we all love cheering for each other. So it is, it's a good old build up and the five in a row and playing Kerry and all that, and everyone is chatting about it. And
yeah.
It's a good atmosphere around the city.
Yeah, definitely. John, yourself, would you get very excited now around this time of the week?
I've thrown in the place, I wish it was over. You know, because you're so anxious, will it happen, will it happen in the game, and Kerry and all that stuff, and having played against Kerry in 2 hours in the finals and lost both of them, you're sort of, you know, still nervous. So I sort of wish it was Monday.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I was talking to Paddy there, Paddy Cullen.
Third best goalkeeper in Dublin.
Third best.
Thanks, John. You're a close second, John. Sorry.
Two of them here in the room.
But I did say to him about the similarities between Kevin Heffernan and Jim Gavin. And you played under Kevin, and of course, we're a teammate of Jim in 1995. Would you see any similarities between the two men?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin was, I always think, very, very clever, but he looked at things and you know, plan and sort of the strategy. So I suppose when you're there as a player, you don't realise as much because you're playing away and it's gone. So when you look back, you think he was clever, and the way he worked players, I think his man management skills were really, really good, because he knew when to give some fella sort of a rollicking, if you like, or put his arm around somebody else and give him a bit of a sort of a, you know, bit of encouragement type of stuff. And I think Jim, if you look at Jim now and what's gone on in the team the last couple of years, just the calmness, I suppose, is for me is one of the similarities. And you know, people wonder what happened at the halftime in the Mayo match. Did they get a hairdryer treatment like Alex Ferguson? I don't think they did at all. I feel it's more like an Excel spreadsheet where they said, sat down, look, here's where we need to go. We need to do more of this and less of that, and you need to be moved there. And I think they're very calm and very, very, very clinical. So yeah, but two great coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. Were you ever stuck down in the hut with Kevin smoking a sweet Athens?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, you know, the team meeting was in the little hut at the gate there. Chrissy Thompson looked after Parnell Park at the time, so it was tiny, you know.
Yeah.
All the fellas huddled in, sitting on top of each other, and
Heffos.
Yeah. Yeah. It was probably still there with you there, was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the tin roof, as I call it. Yeah.
Tin roof. Yeah. Yeah.
Parnell Park, compared to what we have nowadays, they're spoiled nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Compared to what we had back then.
Back in my day, are you going to start that now? Back in my day, we know. Yeah.
We're heading towards 25 years next year, the 95 team, so I'm practicing my wave and left and right, so just to prepare for it. But 25 years have absolutely flown in.
Yeah, you know, they really
it's been really, really quick. Yeah.
And like, are you surprised by what Jim Gavin's achieved? Like, would you have had him marked out when you were playing with him back then in 95?
Probably not. I mean, I suppose, you know, he was very successful, don't forget, under 21 with the under 21 Dublin team, and that's where he came. He built a lot of his management skills. But then, you know, to John's point, I mean, he brings that composure and you know, that pressurised can that you can be in Dublin at times. He brings a very relaxed format. So, you know, I've no idea what he's like in the dressing room as a manager. I managed Westmeath against Dublin. I know he's like at the line. He's very cool and very calm. I don't know how he does it. I wouldn't be able to do it. Even when things aren't going well, like the last day when Mayo got a run us in the first half, he still didn't flinch. He didn't panic in any way. And I think that you know, the manager themselves allows the players to control what's going on the pitch themselves and get it right themselves. And I think he brings that as a manager and as a leader. But did I know in 95 that he was going to be as successful as he is? No, I didn't. Having said that, it's great to see Paul Clark and Jason Sherlock and Jim as part of the 95 team that we played with and had success. So Pat Gilroy before that. I mean, they were a very special bunch, not because I was just playing myself with them, but some of those players have gone on to great things, and I'm not surprised because of that, because they were a really good team back then. We only won one All-Ireland beaten in two, but they were a great squad.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the boys, Clarkie and Sherlock, in a moment, but just to bring Cliona into the conversation, like, have you ever had any dealings with Jim Gavin yourself? Have you met the man, or...?
Yeah, I used to work for a company that did the sports science for the footballers a couple of years ago. So I suppose you'd meet him on that front as well. So, but you're talking about his calm, calculated attention to detail. It's all that in the scientific sense, but also in the human sense. You know, a lot of the footballers would talk about, they talk about their legacy and previous teams and how previous teams went about their business and the types of people they want to be. And so that comes across when you're dealing with them in a professional setting as well, you know, how the lads carry themselves. I don't think they try not to encourage or tolerate many egos around the place, you know.
Yeah, because he does get, and it's obviously mainly non-Dublin fans, he seems to get a little bit of stick from people that seem to think that that's nearly all an act, that it's kind of put on, this kind of thing about, you know, respecting other teams and respecting the past and all that kind of stuff. But it's really genuine, and he does come across a very caring individual as well. Like, he does a lot of work for, you know, he'd seem going out, and it's not very well publicised, you know, he'll go out and visit people, or, you know, I know Roy Curtis, the famous journalist Roy Curtis, who he went out and visited his mum when she wasn't well, you know, he'd be out at different clubs, that kind of thing. So he's a very compassionate man as well.
Well, that comes across, and I think maybe that's the bit that people miss, because it's not really publicised. And now, it's like any good manager, you know, he's demanding. Like, any good manager is demanding. But once you earn the right and put in the effort, then you're treated with respect. And I think that's a really good way to do it. You don't earn that respect and that minding by just showing up. You've got to sort of prove your worth a little bit.
Yeah. Yourself, Cliona, you might have a bit of insight into how the Kerry players are feeling this Sunday, because Dublin in 2010 were going in trying to stop this great Cork team. They were on a brilliant run.
Yeah.
Six in a row they were going for?
I think they were six in a row. Now, in 2010, it was, we ended up playing Tyrone in the final in 2010. So
yeah.
it was Tyrone that put Cork out
they
of the championship.
They put Cork out, yeah.
And it's funny when you hear Cork people describe that year, like their great manager, Eamon, he described it as a stone in their shoe when they lost to Tyrone.
Yeah.
And it was just, they felt they underperformed, and it eked at them for years and years, because they didn't feel like they gave their best, and it was stolen off them.
Yeah.
And I think that loss that year in 2010 for them motivated subsequent years and gave them that sort of, when the Cork players talk about the next run they went on, they talk about always thinking it's not over, and to just keep going, you never know, keep going, because we're going to be beaten someday, so we may as well go out giving our best, you know. So it's just interesting how they use their motivation for it, you know.
Yeah. Jim, I've noticed John, well, it's no secret, like he's not entertaining any talk of five in a row. Any time I interviewed players this year, and there was definitely less media engagements this year. There was no press conferences before games until the All-Ireland final. The couple of the players I interviewed, like, I was trying to go about a roundabout way, because it was that great documentary, I don't know if you saw it, around December time last year, about Offaly stopping Kerry in 1982.
Yeah.
And I kind of said to a couple of players, did you see that documentary? What did you think of the documentary? And even when I mentioned that, they were like, no, I didn't see that.
Tell them nothing.
it must be really hard to keep a lid on it. But when you look at the team, there's a lot of players who were not there for five in a row. You know, so Mannion won't be winning five in a row. You know, Jack McCaffrey, Norm Scully, Howard, Merchant. I mean, they're all, you know, newish into. And for me, the five in a row is about the county and sort of history and looking back rather than the team. And I think Kerry's five run in 82, that was very much an almost a very similar team that went through those couple of Ireland's, you know, previous to that. So I think Jim has, it's nice, you have a mix of fellas who were there, have been there before. It's my first All-Ireland or second All-Ireland, so they won't be, you know, they won't have one five in a row personally. I don't think the hype is too much about it, and it's here and there, but it's not consistently. I from memory, I think the five in a row by Kerry just felt it was everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, there were songs about it, and there were songs in the radio, and they were being played all the time. And there was a couple of bits and pieces going around, but you don't hear them on the radio, and it's not as much. I don't think there's much hype about it in Dublin.
Yeah,
and I think it feels calm enough. I mean, even at games, I don't get a sense of, you know, the five in a row. Even the semi final, there wasn't much talk about the five in a row. There's been enough probably distractions, like Dermot Connolly coming back. I think is a nice distraction to have for the press, and a bit of attention there that pulls away from that as well. So. But, you know, you never know till it's over, and whether it has an effect or doesn't have an effect. I think so far it looks like they're managing it quite well.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if you look at we won the Ireland, we got the four in a row, the row for four, as they called it last year. But immediately after the game, when players are being interviewed, they still wouldn't mention the drive for five.
Yeah.
They still wouldn't mention the five in a row. And so I've no doubt that, you know, Jim from the very outset said, look, we have to get this, you know, five in a row out of everyone's head. And anyone that was interviewed, and I spoke with Kieran Kilkenny, he'd done a gig for us in work, and he wouldn't even mention I was doing a kind of Q&A. And I mentioned the five in a row, and he still wouldn't talk about it. So, you know, you're right. But I think one of the things that Jim has done extremely well is he's managed the press.
Yeah.
He's managed the hype to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And for years, you know, we lost matches over our hype in Dublin. Certainly, I felt, it didn't help us. I'm not saying we lost it completely on that reason only. But it wouldn't have helped because the hype around Dublin is phenomenal. And I just think he's kind of curtailed that. And you're right, it's not hugely out there at the moment. But I'm feeling excited about it. I don't know if anybody else is. Yeah. It's like Christmas week for me.
And then he managed the three in a row type of stuff. And then he managed the four in a row conversation. Yeah. So Jim really hasn't changed his style. His MO, like, it's still the same.
Yeah.
Is that why people don't like him, though? Well, part of the reason, because people get, they want to, you know, come on, show us a bit of emotion, show us a bit of this, and
well,
I
still don't. Like, okay, he's a pilot, and I think that coolness that you need in you know, when you're flying an airplane is hugely important.
Yeah, and when he was in the army doing it as well, especially.
So he's processed, and he doesn't get excited like other managers do, or like I do as when I was managing. And some people, you're right. Some people are saying, like, would he ever just give us some emotion on the line of some that he walks up very professionally, takes the opposition's hand, and it's all you know, process even after the game, and walks in then, you know. But I think that's his DNA, and he's different than other managers, and I think that's what he stands out, you know, for, that coolness, the process he talks about. He always gets interviewed and he always talks about the opposition. He always talks about their stats and how good they are, and he deflects away from his own team and having to talk about it. And I think that's what most managers do, even in the Premiership. But he brings that confidence and assurance to the team itself.
Was he that cool as a player? Because there's always that famous picture of him after 95 on his knees, kind of looking up into the air, clenched fist. It's probably the only picture we have of him showing a bit of emotion.
He was always very quiet and calm. I mean, I remember in a dressing room, we were playing a league match, and he came up to me, and, you know, the forwards used to get into a huddle. He said to me when we broke away, look, he said, I'll be out in front, get it into me. And I says, I will, but you're marking... you know, a midfielder like Liam Hayes or John McDermott, your hands are full with him, never mind Jim inside. So the second game came up anyway, and he says, look, Paul, I'll be out in front, just get it inside. And of course, I'd forgotten about him again. And the third game came in, and he says, Paul, just send it in as high as you can get it. I said, sure, look, you don't even get off the ground, Jim. He says, just send it in anyway, because you're not sending it in to me. First ball, he got my attention straight away with that. At the first ball again, I got in low to him, he got his swivel put over the bar, put the thumbs up. So he had a way of getting his attention, because I was just, yeah, okay, Jim. And I was completely distracted with the game, my own game itself. So So he had that way of getting the best for himself at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you had said, if you look back, I'm not surprised that people in that 95 team have done very well for themselves.
Yeah. Definitely. Cliona, it's funny as well, because Mick Bowen, I know, would have worked as a skills coach with Jim, and now he's managing the women's team, who are going for three in a row. And like Jim, he's killed any kind of, any time you mention, even back-to-back last year, Mick Bowen wouldn't have a bar of it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's the same approach, same skill set. There's definitely some similarities between the two men. But, like, that's what you want out of a manager. You know, what would you rather? Someone who can deliver multiple All-Ireland, or someone who jumps up and down like a clown on the sideline?
Yeah.
You know, like, as a supporter, that's what you want. And as a fan, and as a follower, former player. And Mick definitely does that. I mean, he's, when you're in that culture and you see how successful that can be when you kind of just control all the distractions, you know, it can really give you a massive advantage when you don't get sidetracked by other stuff outside what you're there to do, which is win the game.
Yeah. I want to move on from Jim, but before I do, quickly, if Dublin win five in a row, will he stay on?
Yeah, I think somebody asked me that question. I it feels like he'll do it, you know, he'll do a Sean Boylan, like, you know, it'd be great to win, you know, a couple of All-Irelands with two different teams.
Yeah.
But or a Brian Cody type stuff. So I've never had a conversation with Jim. I get a sense that he's building a sort of a, people talk about a legacy, but they've just built a system going back to when he was with the under-21s, so the 21s come into the senior team. So it's very much a style of behaviour as opposed to a style of play as well, because that's evolved a little bit over the last couple of years. So I think it's about behaviour, it's the type of players he wants, the type of people they become, it's the type of way they behave. So that for me feels much more like a culture change in Dublin than we would have played with fellas who were mad and doing off, you know, off the wall type stuff and jumping around. But this is just more consistency, and it must be very calming, I think, in there. And I'm sure they have their hours of their arguments and debates. But I mean, when they come in, everyone knows the task, both from an individual point of view, a line on the pitch point of view, and then overall. So, answer your question, I don't know. I'd love to see him stay on and you know, win five in a row, lose the next two, come back and win three or four in a row. A bit like, you know, my feeling is a bit like Sean Boylan.
Yeah.
Twice with two different teams, two sets of different sets of players, and that is even a stronger legacy again. Look at what Brian Cody has done with Kilkenny.
Yeah.
And it sort of feels like that. I don't see him in, you know, he's not there for the hype.
Yeah.
He's not there for the adulation. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he's there to serve the footballing public of Dublin by delivering and having this entity on the pitch all the time, which won't always be successful. They'll definitely have a dip and someone will beat them and the players, you know, get the mix right. But I would feel that he would come back again and win All-Ireland with a new team. That's the way I feel it's going to manifest itself, hopefully.
Hopefully so.
Yeah.
John, you would have stood many times with Hill 16 at your back. I was talking to one of the lads outside about it yesterday. We were just wondering, is there the same kind of energy or power coming from Hill 16 now? But what is that like in a game? You know, what is it that, you know, just that, you know, that fanaticism coming down from the Dublin fans? Is it really a kind of an extra, is like a 16th man, to use the cliche?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, honestly, the first time I really felt that was at half, the start of the second half of the Mayo match, because I was in the stand, and then really for the first time I could feel just momentum shifting both on the pitch and sort of off the pitch, because there was just no doubt, this was just incredible what was happening in the first 10 minutes of the second half, and you just felt like, even, you know, I actually felt invested in the game much more than I had in the last couple of years, even, because this just felt like, geez, we're going to do something here. They're on a roll, and now they're playing the way I wanted to play, which was attacking the ball, the midfield. Fenton caught a couple of great balls in midfield. You just knew he was going to catch them.
Yeah.
And the breaking ball was one where it had to be one of the balls. So that, it can happen, and it can help a team. And I just think particularly that was just really infectious, I felt, for the first time as a fan, that just that the switch, if you like, clicked, and then suddenly, and then we just blew them away in sort of 10 minutes of football. It was just unbelievable to be watching, and I think just the experience as a fan. So I quite, yeah, it does, and it does help, and you know, you get that momentum, and if you can time that wave of the crowd roaring a shout with something that's going on the pitch, and you get the synergies together, you know, it has big impacts.
Yeah, you would have kicked a couple of points into the hill, Paul, over the years. And
did you?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, wind assistant.
In the warm-up.
Wind assistant.
It was in the warm-up.
Yeah, the warm-up. But I remember I'd missed a game. I was suspended for a game, and I said I wanted to go on the hill during a championship to see what it was like. And thank God we can't hear what they say on the hill when you miss scores, because they were slating our own lads. But for the hill in full flow, and you're looking at it, particularly from the Hogan side or Cusick side, it's just a phenomenal scene, and the atmosphere around Croke Park when the hill is in full flight is phenomenal, and it does absolutely give you a great lift when you need it most at that 16th man, and you know, Ireland use it in the rugby, and Dublin use it in Hill 16, and it's fantastic. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Cleaner, and I'm sorry, Paul, we're going to push you. You might go out for a cup of tea. We'll go to the goalkeepers union here. I'm only joking.
But penalties.
We wanted to chat about, obviously, the great Stephen Cluxton. You know, he's the first ever captain to lift five All-Ireland titles. He just keeps breaking records year after year after year. I suppose, you know, the man is an enigma, really, Cleaner, isn't he? He doesn't talk to the media. We don't know anything about him, really. Have you ever met him? Do you know anything about Stephen? Or?
Yeah, met him a good few times. And his sister, Avril, played with the ladies for a good few years. So you'd meet him through that as well. But a bit like we talk about Jim, excuse me, like a really nice bloke, really down to earth, steady as a rock type fella, which, again, it reflected how he performs on the pitch. It just does his job. You know, and we probably should clear up that goalkeepers are definitely the most important and the most talented people on the pitch, without a shadow of a doubt, in all sports. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I agree, and I'm outnumbered here as
definitely,
well.
Definitely.
So I definitely would agree. Yeah, I definitely would agree.
And we should put up with midfielders giving out about the kickouts and all this. That's a little bit too high, you know. Yeah. But, like, in fairness, what you get with Stephen is just consistency of the basics, you know, and be it shot stopping, kick outs, controlling his defence, and again that sense of calm, which is so important. Like, you don't, for defenders, you ask them what do they want out of the goalkeeper. They want someone who can see the game, can help them out if things are challenging from a defensive point of view, and that's what you get. You've got a really solid man behind you, just, I suppose, backing everybody up.
Yeah. John, does his, and obviously his distribution is the big thing that has revolutionised the game and thing that people focus on, but even this year alone, he's made some really crucial saves in games as well. And as Cleaner was alluding to there, just that sense of calm when a defender knows, if I make a mistake, I've got this brilliant shot stopper behind me as well that could save my bacon.
Oh yeah, look, he's been integral to what has happened, you know, in the last, 10 years, you know, since, 2011, you know, and all the success and being captain and contributing. He almost strikes me as the next manager of Dublin, like Jim. He's almost the perfect player for Jim. He almost apes that sort of calmness. He doesn't get involved in stuff. And his ability to sort of tweak his game over the last couple of years, the way football has evolved, he's been sort of responsible for some of that, I think, himself. But he's just, it's probably about consistency. You know, like it's been all about his kickouts. Then that sometimes issues, had made a couple of saves, people forget that. He's really good at that as well. You know, all his kickouts and distribution. Yeah. Like, he's a really good goalkeeper, you know, behind it all. So he has it all, and I just think, you know, he's part of that squad that's worked really hard. I think he worked very hard as well to be there before players. I think it was John Leonard, the subkeeper, wrote in his book that he wanted to try and get better. He turned up earlier, but Cluxton was there, and he come half an hour earlier, and Cluxton was there before him again, so he just couldn't ever get ahead of him. So I think that's understated, you know, quiet man. He's just diligent, he goes about his work in terms of the preparation.
Yeah.
You know, so he trains very hard, he prepares very hard, and it's manifesting itself on the pitch in terms of how he has influenced this Dublin team in the last couple of years and football in general.
You were 36 when you hung up the boots for Intercounty.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, at 36, at the late 90s, that was a fair age to be going on playing. Like, could he go into his 40s?
He could easily. I mean, I finished up in sort of 97. It was different. You know, we got bet by Meath in the first round of the Leinster Championship. So, and I've been there a long time. But then 97, so you're looking, there's nothing then until sort of next, whenever the league starts, November, December. And it's still hard to walk away if they win five in a row and been so successful. I mean, you know, why wouldn't you stay if you're fit and you're healthy?
Yeah.
There's no reason why you couldn't stay on for another couple of years, the way he's playing and the way the team is playing. So as part of, you know, what's going on around you, personal motivation, he could easily keep going, you know, because he's setting more and more records all the time. He could easily go for another couple of years without a doubt if he's injury free.
Well, if you've just joined us, folks, the Drive for Five special is taking over OTB Sports Radio all day today from 7 a.m. till midnight, with all the build-up to the All-Ireland final on Sunday between Dublin and Kerry. It's all with thanks to Tech7. Simply tech it and leave it. And as we continue the Dublin love in here with myself, Paul Beelan, Cliona O'Connor and John O'Leary, we're just going to take a little breather. And here's Darren O'Sullivan on what it was like when Kevin McManaman stuck the ball in the Kerry net in front of Hill 16.
I'll never forget that day, hearing it when the ball hit, and you could feel it.
Yeah.
You could feel it, like, and you could feel their confidence grow, the crowd starting to believe, and I was just starting to get on ball, and then there was the free, which seemed to take an eternity, and then all of a sudden it was over. And you're like...
Yeah. It wasn't long after the free was over, I watched it back this morning. Like, it was pretty much a kick out where ye all retreated back.
Yeah.
I know you were on the bench at that stage, you'd come off, but ye all retreated back.
Yeah, but one kick pass from Kerry and they could have been well inside our half if Joe McQuillan had given another 5 or 10 seconds, which thank God he didn't.
Fair play to you, you're admitting it.
No, it was over the 2 minutes of injury time at this stage, so he's well within his right.
Yeah, but it was just about a minute and a half to walk up and kick the ball.
Yeah, well, Bernard and was saving him down. Yeah.
But like that's the thing, like, I suppose that was probably the start as well of the goalies coming up to take kick out or taking free kicks.
It felt like a very novel thing.
Yeah, I was like, geez, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But like nowadays it would be added on because it's more common and stuff. Mm. But I just remember, like, even after the game, it's over and Dublin is celebrating and you're just sitting there on the pitch and you're looking around like, going, what's just happened? Yeah. Like, because it's just
not meant to happen to us.
Yeah.
I'm sure Stephen wasn't touched from the goal line to getting the ball to hit the free, whereas on Sunday, if the same thing happens,
he'll be hit, all right.
If you'll have chatting to him and helping him up and that type of thing. So,
you're welcome back to the Dublin Love In on the Drive for Five special here, taking over OTB Sports Radio all day from 7 a.m. till midnight. Build up to the All Ireland football final, of course, between Dublin and Kerry on Sunday. It's all thanks to Tech7. Simply tech it and leave it, lads. We've got about 10 minutes left before these Kerry louts come into studio, so we better make the most of it. We've already got the goalkeeping expert for you, Stephen Cluxton. I just want to ask you, Paul, as our midfield expert here, about Brian Fenton. You know, we've had some great midfielders over the years, you know, Brian Mullins, Bernard Brogan Sr., there's been yourself and Steinsy from 95, Michael Darren McCauley of the present midfielders. Where does Fento rate amongst all those great players?
I think he's up there with them, if not one of the greatest. He has an awful lot of natural attributes. You know, his ability to get from box to box at a particular pace, even in the 65th minute or near the end of the game, is phenomenal. And that comes from the hard work that he does. I know he was involved with the compromised rules, and they were telling me that while they were training, he was in the gym. While they were over there having drinks and enjoying it, he was on the gym on the treadmill and he was pushing himself hard, you know, as part of that. So it doesn't come natural to anyone to have that ability. But he is phenomenal, and you know, when the game needed to be turned, and John mentioned earlier on against Mayo, he won fantastic ball around the middle and set the platform, and he drove down the middle several times, and he does that really, really well. He comes on the end of a move, and he's a good finisher. He was, I think he was full forward on the 21 at one stage, so he can finish when he gets inside, and he is a fantastic player. Now, Stephen Cluxton can kick balls short and long, which absolutely helps him. The game isn't as physical as it was when we played in the 90s, so that would help an athlete to get from A to B. But he's a brilliant player, and you know, if he's not the greatest player, he will be one of the greatest players, or up there with him, in my estimation. Michael Darren McCauley compliments him in terms of his ability, but yeah, Brian is a phenomenal player, and he needs a big game. We need a big game for him on Sunday as well, and hopefully he'll deliver that again. So yeah,
that's an interesting one, actually. Michael Darren McCauley has played alongside him this year, so is James McCarthy, Cliona, you know, and I know it depends on who's going to play in the half back line as well, but do you think Michael Darren would be his best foil for this Sunday?
Yeah, I suppose Michael Darren, he offers a lot, and I think him and Fenton really complement each other. You know, they do have an understanding, but I reckon that's the one of the strengths of this team, is that people can rotate in and out, and people can be used at different times in the games depending on the opposition. You know, so whether it's Michael Darren that starts, or whether Michael Darren comes off the bench, or you know, for a last 20 minutes type thing, or a second half job, you know, it goes back to that knowing the task, doesn't it? They all know the task, and they all understand their role and what it is at particular times in the game that they need to do.
Yeah, John, Kerry will have, I suppose, the conundrum of whether to put somebody on Brian Fenton to mark him closely, like the likes, I don't know if you put David Moran on him, you know, young Jack Barry.
Yeah.
It's a tough one for them, isn't it?
It's tough for them, because I think Dave Moran is key to their game, I think, on Sunday. You know, yeah. He's been really, really good, and he's a link back to their last win. So it depends on how they use him. So it's a bit like having your best midfielder. Does he mark our best midfielder? And then you use the impact of giving a trade off, or you try somebody else and keep Dave Moran sort of free somewhere else on the pitch. So it's an interesting one, you know, and what that matchup going to look like, and what's Dublin's matchup going to be with Fenton. You go with McCauley, who does that sort of a lot of the workhorse stuff around the place, or you go with sort of more what might be sort of an athlete like maybe McCarthy. You know, who'll try, and I think it depends whether they sit back a bit more or whether they sort of go toe to toe early on. Will they take what the plan is? So yeah.
The forward line, I think, now for Dublin really picks itself. Paul, you know, I think Brian Howard, Kilkenny, you know, Niall Scully, and then up full forward you're gonna have Conn, Dean Rock, and Paul Mannion. Yeah. But on the bench, you know, we've seen Bernard Brogan get a little bit of a taste of action, and of course Jeremy Connolly. And Jeremy Connolly's been taking up a lot of the headlines, which I'm sure Jim was very pleased about all year. I was up in Tyrone, I was up in Omagh, I saw Jeremy playing. You know, he maybe didn't get pressed maybe as hard as he might against a first choice Tyrone team. Do you put him into the 26? Do you have him there on the bench on Sunday?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's such a phenomenal player, you know, with both feet, and he's so skillful. You absolutely you have him in the 26, you know, if he comes off the bench, I think he'll make a big impact. Then it'll take something like that, depending if you're going down the last 10 or 15 minutes and the game is tight, he will absolutely lift it. But the bench that Dublin have, you know, and McMenamin as well, you know, he has caused Kerry untold damage over the years. And, you know, sometimes when you're playing against team, teams and you score a lot against those teams, you're confident. So if he comes off the bench, as any of the players that come in to make an impact, to make a big difference. But Connolly, for me, it's amazing. I would have never said that he was going to play any part this year. And the way Jim slipped him into the conversation and announced that he was there, and none of the players leaked it out. So it just goes to show, you talk about tasks and processes and the way he is, like, they're a very close-knit team, that Dublin team. And if they didn't let Connolly at the cat out of the bag with Connolly playing, well, then it just goes to show where their mindset is and very focused. But yeah, I mean, you know, midfield is a huge, it will be a huge area on Sunday to win that middle section, because we need to get the ball inside quick. And I think that's what happened against Mayo. We didn't get the ball inside quick enough for those forwards, the likes of Paul Meehan and Conor Callaghan. And when they got the ball in, they were very decisive. And I think that is hugely important. I think Stephen Cluxton kickouts will help, because Howard is well able to catch ball himself as an option. Kilkenny will come out and catch a ball as well. So they can bypass that middle sector if we are causing problems. And we've got some very good options, whether he goes short or long. And I think that's what Stephen Cluxton's decision making is very, very good at times. And he, you know, particularly we keep the scoreboard ticking over, and he's very good at setting that platform up to get scores.
Just briefly, Cliona, before we wrap up here, is it a concern all Dublin have haven't really had a tight game this year coming into this game on Sunday?
You can make it a concern if you want it. You can build it up. You would imagine with the competition for places and the level of training that it should not be a physical consideration. They should have enough training done, have enough in-house games from that point of view. And I think the fact that it's an All-Ireland final, if you're lacking in motivation, or if you're looking for tough games to prepare yourself, there's something missing. I don't think it will be an issue for this particular team. I think it could be used as a distraction if they really wanted to, but I can't imagine they would. They'd have guarded against that too well, I think.
Yeah. So, just to finish then, John, are we going to see the first men's team win 5 All-Ireland Senior inter-county titles in a row on Sunday?
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, I'd love to say yes with great confidence, but you're always, you know, you remember things like 1975 when Kerry came back and beat Dublin in 74 with an unknown young team, like nothing to lose. And that's, for me, that's the sort of the Kerry, I think, link is, you know, the 75, young team, nothing to lose, no one expects it to win. So there's always that risk. But I just think Dublin are well prepared. And the first half of the Mayo match was probably the best test I've had all year in terms of, you know, that really tests you at halftime, your mental capacity to change and come out in the second half, deliver what you expect to deliver. So, yes, I'd love to say with absolute certainty, but as I was out there within a 50-52 horse race, anything could happen. But, you know, fingers crossed, yes.
Cliona, confidence, are we going to do it?
I think we will, yeah.
You will?
Yeah.
Paul?
Yeah, I'm very confident. I think we win by 4 or 5, yeah. Definitely.
Brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure. John O'Leary, thanks a million for joining us. Cliona O'Connor as well, and Paul Beale. It's been brilliant. That's it for the Dublin Love-In on OTB's build-up to the All-Ireland Final on Sunday. We're getting kicked out of here because there's a few heavy shoulders coming in from the Kerry crew coming up next. So we're going to leave you with this throwback. That was Dean Rock's first ever interview after a GPS gate at the Dubs homecoming in 2017.
You've had a lot thrown at you in your career. A GPS, I imagine, is a new thing. That's never happened before.
Ah, look, I didn't actually notice anything at the time, Renton. So look, it's irrelevant, really, you know. And
did you feel something hitting off of you? Did you realise what was going on at the time?
No, not at all. Look, you get the bit of verbals and stuff when you're kicking free kicks, and that's all natural, you know. Yeah. Everyone does that when a free taker's taking a free kick. It's the same with most kind of field sports, like that, in that sense. So look, I was just really concentrated on my own strike and the execution of my kick, and once I did that, I knew the ball would go over the bar.
When you found out afterwards what it was, did you think, wow, that's never happened before?
Ah, look, just whatever, like, you know, just take it in your stride. As I said, it's irrelevant, so it's, you know, just, there's no major issue with it.
You had a great game scoring from play as well. I mean, that's something you've really added over the last couple of years, and you took your points well. Yeah, you know, you made your decisions well out on the pitch.
Yeah, of course. Look, I'm probably one of the more experienced guys out there. I'm 27 now, so you know, Paul Mannion's probably a little bit younger than me, 24. He made some great decisions out there at times in the second half as well. He really stood up and delivered when we really needed to. And I suppose it's just one of them games. Every point is going to be crucial and going to be matter. So it was just up to me to kind of keep the scoreboard tinking over, as did the rest of the lads. And Mayo got a crucial goal in that second half, and it kind of kept them ahead of us up until the death, really. And look, as I said, every point counted, and it was great just to get a few scores.
Off the ball. Italian summers.